How do you draw the line between dramatic license and historical accuracy? That was the essence of the controversy over the recent ABC docudrama The Path to 9/11, just as it was a few years ago with this CBS miniseries that put words in Ronald Reagan's mouth that he never uttered. As our linguist Jeff Nunberg points out, docudrama may be a new word, but it raises old questions about truth and fiction.
I have a friend who started his publishing career many years ago in the New Yorker's legendary fact-checking department. After about a year or so in the job, he told me at lunch that he'd just gotten a promotion. From now on, he'd be the fiction checker. Gee, I said, what exactly does a fiction checker do? Well, there are really two things, he said. On the one hand, if somebody writes a short story about a dentist in Cleveland called Diego Minsky, you have to make sure that there isn't actually a dentist in Cleveland by that name. And on the other hand, you want to make sure that nobody gets on a Fifth Avenue bus and goes uptown. That's how things are supposed to work in fiction. You make up the people, and you leave the rest of the world as it is. Or if real people do show up under their own names, it's only in cameo appearances, like Napoleon in War and Peace, or Pauly Shore in an Entourage episode. But things get more complicated and controversial when real people move to center stage in the narrative, particularly when they're depicted doing things that never happened, as they were in the 2003 docudrama about Ronald Reagan, or the recent ABC docudrama, The Path to 9/11. Docudramas make literary theorists of us all. In an editorial about the 9/11 miniseries, the New York Times laid down its view categorically. When attempting to recreate real events on screen, it said, you do not show real people doing things they never did. Meanwhile, defenders of the miniseries were mining literary history to demonstrate that that's exactly what writers have always done. The columnist Victor Davis Hanson argued that the script took no liberties that you couldn't find in the works of Bob Woodward, Michael Moore, or Herodotus. Dramatists have been blending fact and fiction since Aeschylus, and some people like to say it's just docudramas all the way back. True, the term didn't actually enter the language until the 1970s, along with other genre-bending portmanteau words like infotainment and advertorial. But that hasn't stopped some people from using docudrama retroactively to refer to Elizabethan political pamphlets or Shakespeare's histories. Indeed, if there really were nothing more to docudrama than rifling the headlines for dramatic subjects, then the word would apply to movies like Quiz Show, Ali, Malcolm X, or just about every picture Oliver Stone ever made, not to mention old biopics like The Pride of the Yankees and The Glenn Miller Story. Anything, that is, that might describe itself as based on a true story. But when most of us talk about docudramas, we're not thinking of movies like Schindler's List or Raging Bull, which borrow from historical sources to create their own dramatic worlds. It may be unlikely that J. Edgar Hoover actually ate melon from a pool boy's mouth, the way Oliver Stone has Bob Hoskins do in the movie Nixon. But in the end, these movies stand or fall as cinema, not depictions of history, which is why they can be compelling even to people who have no interest in the events they take as their points of departure. People went to see Raging Bull because of Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro, not because they wanted to find out what made Jake LaMotta tick. But the docudrama was invented as a way of recreating real events, as the Times puts it, and as such, it's completely parasitic on them. If you happen to be out of the country when the Elizabeth Smart kidnapping was all over the media, you're not going to be very interested in watching the made-for-TV movie based on it. Docudramas reshape the events we've been watching on TV according to the well-known rules of TV drama, where stories follow a seven-act trajectory before they're brought to a reassuring moral closure. The object is simply to give us the romantic side of familiar issues. So the docudrama is by definition a modest form, which avoids drawing any attention to itself as art. The camera angles and lighting are conventional, the scripts are efficient and melodramatic, the psychology is simplified to stereotypes that drive the plot, and public figures are played by second-tier actors who are unlikely to leave any strong impressions behind them. Above all, docudramas are eminently forgettable, not just because their believability requires them to be pedestrian, but because they don't have any dramatic existence independent of the stories they're recreating. There's nothing older than yesterday's docudrama. Who'd go now to rent any of the docudramas that were made about the Amy Fisher case or the Menendez brothers? Not to mention Everybody's Baby, the rescue of Jessica McClure. That was the Jessica who was rescued from the drainpipe in Texas, not the one who was rescued from an Iraqi hospital. But for just those reasons, we expect docudramas to be truer than other movies drawn from history. Dramatizing the Reagan presidency or the build-up to 9/11 is not at all the same thing as fictionalizing it, after all. So we accept the things that people do and say in docudramas with the same implicit trust with which we accept the bus routes in a New Yorker short story. We assume that everything is as it actually was, only a bit tidier. And when screenwriters misrepresent the events themselves, then the production needs something more than the standard disclaimer about being a dramatization. Notice, they should say, the program you are about to see is not a docudrama, it's just a bad movie.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist who teaches at the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley. His new book on political language is called Talking Right.